Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app.
Glad to be here, as always.
So, if you've been following biotechnology at all over the past decade, you know there is this, like, fundamental law of the CRISPR universe.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. It's the core operating system we've all just kind of come to accept, which is you use an RNA guide to hunt down and cut DNA. I mean, it is the golden rule.
It really is. RNA is the navigator and DNA is the target. We've basically built an entire era of gene editing on that exact premise.
Yeah.
Every major breakthrough, every new therapeutic approach has essentially taken that relationship for granted.
Right. But what if we're doing this deep dive today because someone decided to completely flip that operating system backward?
Which is still just wild to think about.
I know, right? Think about the biological machinery for a second. I mean, it's like taking a standard car, realizing you can somehow put it in reverse, and winning a Formula One race driving backward.
That is a great way to put it.
It just breaks all the assumed rules of how the machine was built to function, right? Like at a mechanical level. So what if we could trick this ancient bacterial immune system into using DNA as the guide to hunt down and destroy RNA?
Yeah, and you have to ask, how could reversing this core mechanism change the future of viral detection?
Exactly. Or, you know, disease diagnostics, or even how we knock down disease-causing genes in human cells.
Because pulling off a biochemical shift of that magnitude, I mean, it requires a team willing to just completely ignore what everyone else in the field considers a non-negotiable rule.
Absolutely. And so today we celebrate the work of Xiaolong Wu, Wei Helam, and the incredible research team at the Hong Kong University of Science and Technology who have advanced our understanding of programmable RNA manipulation.
That's a brilliant group.
Seriously. And honestly, my first thought reading through this research was, how does a team even begin to rethink a system that the entire scientific world has already standardized?
Right.
Like, where do you even start looking for a loophole in something that established?
Well, you start by looking incredibly closely at the normal rules. Specifically, they looked at class 2 CRISPR systems, like Cas2a.
Okay, Cas12a.
Right. Because to understand the loophole, you really have to understand the checkpoint. So in nature, these systems act as adaptive immune machinery for bacteria.
Right? Yeah, tracking so far.
Cas12a uses a single CRISPR RNA,
yeah.
So AAR RNA, which folds into a specific shape. That RNA guide basically sits inside the Cas protein, forming this inactive complex, and it just waits.
It waits for a specific trigger, right? Because the system doesn't just like run around cutting things at random inside the bacteria.
Correct, that would be disastrous. It's waiting for the protospacer adjacent motif, or PAM.
The famous PAM.
Exactly. The PAM is a short, highly specific sequence of DNA found on the invading virus. The Cas12a protein basically scans foreign DNA, and it physically cannot activate its cutting mechanism until it engages with that PAM sequence.
Wow, okay.
That engagement physically changes the shape of the Cas protein, licensing it to unzip the DNA and check if the sequence actually matches its RNA guide.
Okay, so if I'm picturing this for you listening, the PAM is essentially a strict bouncer at a club, and the RNA guide is your ID card.
That's a perfect analogy.
The bouncer has to see that specific PAM sequence on the door before they even bother checking the ID card. If the PAM isn't there, I mean, nothing happens.
Nothing at all.
But this is where I'm getting stuck. If the bouncer Cas12a is specifically hardwired to only unlock when it sees a DNA-based PAM on a virus, how on earth are they using it to target RNA?
Right, because
RNA natively doesn't have these PAM sequences. It just doesn't make sense.
That is the billion-dollar question right there. And on top of that puzzle, there's a massive practical problem with the traditional setup. RNA is incredibly fragile.
Oh, yeah. It degrades so fast.
Exactly. So if you're trying to use CRISPR for diagnostics out in the real world, say, I don't know, a hot clinic in a rural area relying on a fragile RNA guide is a huge vulnerability.
So the field has been trying to engineer around this, right? Like tweaking the Cas protein, changing the PAM sequences it recognizes.
Tons of effort has gone into that, yeah.
But it sounds like everyone was just trying to like build a better bouncer without actually questioning the ID card itself.
That exact limitation, the absolute requirement for a DNA PAM, is precisely the backdoor the researchers used to hack the system.
Really?
Yeah. Since the target RNA doesn't have a PAM, the researchers thought, well, what if we just provide the PAM ourselves?
What do you mean?
They engineered synthetic CRISPR DNA, or cr DNA. Instead of an RNA guide, They built a guide entirely out of DNA,
right,
and they embedded the PAM sequence directly into it.
Wait, hold on. So instead of searching for the key on the virus, they just glued the key directly onto the guide itself?
Yes.
They decoupled the activation from the target?
They completely decoupled it. The synthetic DNA guide provides the structural key, the PAM, to satisfy the Cas12a protein and turn it on.
Oh.
And because the guide is now made of DNA, the substrate it naturally wants to bind to through base pairing is RNA. So the target RNA is now just that, a target, stripped of any structural activation duties.
If you're listening and wondering why that's a big deal, I mean, think about it like this. They took an enzyme that requires two things from a target, a physical key, and a matching sequence, and they split those jobs.
Exactly.
They put the key on the tool itself, but surely they had to prove this actually works physically, right? Not just, you know, conceptually on a whiteboard.
Now, they went all out. They visualized the hack down to the atomic level. They used AlphaFold3 predictions and then confirmed it with cryo-electron microscopy, or cryo-EM.
Nice.
They actually captured the physical structure of this new complex at a 3.17 angstrom resolution.
Which is insane. If you're not familiar with angstroms, a 3.17 angstrom resolution means zooming in so closely on this microscopic protein that you can literally see the individual atoms locking together like gears.
It's an incredibly clear picture of the biology. The picture was beautiful. They observed a 20 base pair DNA-RNA heteroduplex sitting perfectly inside the Cas12a binding channel.
Wow.
Yeah, the PAM sequence embedded in the single-stranded DNA guide formed a stem loop, and they could see it being specifically recognized by the PCAS interacting domain, or PI domain, of the Cas protein.
I do have a structural question here, though.
Sure.
Because in a normal CRISPR system, the RNA guide folds into the specific structure called a pseudonaut, right? And that basically helps hold the protein complex together.
Right, the pseudonaut is crucial normally.
So if they threw out the RNA and replaced it with DNA, which lacks that pseudonaut, wouldn't the Cas protein just flop around and fall apart?
You'd think so, right? Protein dynamics become a huge factor here. The cryo-EM structures revealed that without that RNA pseudonaut, a specific part of the protein called the WEDI domain is highly flexible.
Okay.
It is essentially unanchored. But, and this is the crazy part, the entire system doesn't fall apart.
Wait, really?
Yeah. The PI domain we just mentioned locks onto the synthetic DNA's embedded PAM perfectly. To prove the core was stable, the researchers used a technique called limited trypsin proteolysis,
which acts like a molecular pair of scissors that chops up loose, unstructured proteins, right?
Correct. If a protein is flopping around randomly, trypsin will just shred it.
Right.
But when they applied it, they found that binding the DNA guide induced a highly ordered, distinct conformational state. A very clear 110 kilodalton fragment appeared.
Which means what, exactly?
It tells us that even though that one outer WEDI domain is flexible, the central catalytic core of the machine is locked in, shielded, and fully intact.
That is fascinating. So structurally, they proved the glued-on key fits into the lock without breaking the machine?
Exactly.
But, you know, getting the key in the lock is only half the battle. Mechanically, does this thing actually cut?
Oh, it cuts. And it does so following a very precise, measurable mechanical sequence. It's a two-step kinetic model.
Okay, walk me through it.
First, the Cas12a protein binds to the synthetic DNA guide using that embedded PAM. This forms a deoxyribonucleoprotein, or DNP complex.
Okay.
They measured the binding affinity here, and the numbers are staggering. It locks onto the DNA guide first with a highly stable grip. The dissociation constant, which scientists call KD1, is 22.7 nanomolar.
Meaning it grabs onto that DNA guide tightly and doesn't easily let go. It's a very stable initial lock.
Very stable. Only after that first step does it go hunting for the RNA. Step two is recruiting the target RNA, which has an even tighter binding affinity of 14.2 nanomolar.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's not fumbling around in the dark. It's a strict, highly efficient two-step sequence.
So how exactly is it cutting the RNA once it finds it? Is it using the same molecular scissors it normally uses for DNA?
It is. High-resolution mapping showed it cuts the RNA, specifically at 2, 5, and 6 bases downstream of the spacer sequence. And here's the crucial biochemical proof. The system can recognize and bind to the RNA without any magnesium present, but the actual molecular scissors, a part of the protein called the RhoVC domain, strictly require magnesium ions to execute the cut.
Ah, okay.
This proves the protein is using the exact same conserved catalytic pathway it normally uses to slice DNA, just, you know, successfully redirected at RNA.
That's brilliant. Now, anyone familiar with CRISPR diagnostics knows that when Cas12a gets activated, it doesn't just quietly cut its target and stop.
No, it definitely doesn't.
It goes a little wild. Does this reprogrammed system do the same thing?
It does. We call this collateral damage, or transcleavage. Once the DNA-guided Cas12a finds and cuts its target RNA, it basically enters a hyperactive state where it will indiscriminately chop up any nearby single-stranded DNA reporter molecules.
Which sounds bad, but it's actually useful, right?
Extremely useful. We use this robust transcleavage to generate a fluorescent signal in diagnostic tests. If the tube glows, you know the target RNA was found.
Right.
But the initial hunt itself is incredibly accurate. The system easily discriminates single nucleotide mismatches, especially in the seed region, the first few bases of the sequence. Even one wrong letter early in the sequence causes activity to drop massively.
Okay, I have to push back here for a second because this brings up a massive evolutionary contradiction to me.
Lay it on me.
We are talking about Cas1a, right? An enzyme that evolved for billions of years specifically to hunt and cut DNA. Now we're giving it a DNA guide. Why doesn't it just accidentally bind and cut single-stranded or double-stranded DNA targets in the wild? Like, how does it ignore its natural prey?
That was actually one of the most rigorous tests they performed. When they flooded the complex with single-stranded and double-stranded DNA, it completely ignored them.
Wait, really? How?
The reason comes down to a brilliant structural quirk. Remember that the synthetic DNA guide already occupies the PAME interacting groove.
Right, the glued-on key.
Exactly. If a double-stranded DNA target tries to enter, there's a literal steric clash. It physically bumps into the guide and is blocked from entering the channel.
So it's like trying to put a second coin into a vending machine slot that's already jammed. The physical space is already occupied by the first coin in the guide, so the double-stranded DNA just bounces off.
That's a great way to picture it. And as for single-stranded DNA, the binding channel of Cas12a strongly disfavors DNA-DNA hybrids.
Oh, because it wants RNA?
Yeah, it evolved to prefer the geometry of a DNA-RNA heteroduplex in that specific catalytic state. So it actively rejects DNA targets, enforcing strict selectivity for RNA.
That is just elegant. I mean, because the system is so strictly selective for RNA and it uses highly stable DNA guides instead of fragile RNA, we are looking at massive real-world applications that traditional CRISPR has struggled to conquer.
Absolutely massive.
Let's dig into the diagnostic breakthrough they developed from this, which they call SLEUTH.
SLEUTH stands for Specific Locus Evaluation Utilizing Targeted Hydrolysis. It is a diagnostic platform designed to actually survive the real world.
Okay, paint a picture for us.
Imagine you have a patient sample. You use a technique called isothermal amplification, essentially a way to copy genetic material at a constant temperature without needing fancy, bulky lab equipment.
Love that.
You couple that with a transcription step to turn the viral or disease markers in that sample into amplified RNA targets.
Right.
Those RNA targets activate our DNA-guided Cas12a, which unleashes that transcleavage collateral damage to cut a fluorescent reporter. The tube glows, and you have a positive diagnosis.
To really put this into perspective for our listeners, let's compare this to something like Sherlock, the famous CRISPR diagnostic system we've discussed before on a previous deep dive.
Right, Sherlock is the standard.
Relying on engineered RNA guides in a field diagnostic kit is like trying to navigate the Amazon jungle with a map made of wet tissue paper. One wrong move, a little humidity, and it just falls apart.
It's extremely delicate.
Moving to DNA guides with SLEUTH is like upgrading to a thick, laminated map. It can sit in a warehouse or in the back of a truck in a hot climate for months and still work perfectly.
The logistical advantage cannot be overstated. By eliminating fragile RNA guides from the manufacturing pipeline, the reagents become vastly more stable for global deployment. But, you know, they didn't stop at diagnostics in a test tube.
Of course they didn't.
They wanted to know if this DNA-guided system could operate inside the ultimate test environment, a living human cell.
Which is notoriously hostile to foreign genetic material.
Very hostile. Human cells are packed with nucleuses, basically enzymes that act like molecular shredders for anything they don't recognize, especially free-floating DNA.
Right.
They tested this in human HEK293T cells, attempting to silence specific RNA messages. To stop the cell from chewing up the synthetic DNA guide, they added phosphorothioate, or PS, modifications to the ends of the cr-DNA.
Basically swapping out normal oxygen atoms on the DNA backbone for sulfur.
Right.
Creating a sort of chemical armor.
Exactly. It essentially turns the outer layer of the DNA into Kevlar. They co-transfected the human cells with the Cas12a protein and these armored DNA guides, specifically designing them to target an EGFP fluorescent reporter gene.
And the results were far from subtle.
Right.
The impact was massive. They saw a 56% drop in EGFP reporter fluorescence.
Wow.
And when they quantified the actual mRNA levels, the actual genetic messages being sent out by the cell, there was a 76% reduction.
That's incredible.
That proved the DNA-guided Cas12a was actively hunting down and destroying specific RNA inside a living cell.
Let's just pause and appreciate a 76% reduction. When you're trying to silence a disease-causing gene, knocking down its messenger RNA by 3/4 can be the difference between a severe pathology and being completely asymptomatic.
Absolutely. And crucially, they verified this precision with transcriptome-wide RNA sequencing.
Oh, to check for collateral damage.
Right. They looked at the entire landscape of RNA in the cell, and there were no significant off-target effects. The system was completely surgical. They even successfully knocked down an endogenous human gene, the MIF gene, proving it works on natural cellular targets, not just artificial glowing reporters.
So when we step back and look at the whole picture here, the implications for the future of biology are just staggering. If you were to summarize the absolute core insight of this entire deep dive for our listeners, what is the key takeaway?
Well, I'd say this research shatters the long-held assumption that CRISPR-Cas enzymes intrinsically require RNA guides to function. By decoupling structural activation from sequence recognition, scientists have reprogrammed Cas12a into a highly specific DNA-guided RNA targeting tool. This provides a vastly more stable and customizable architecture for the future of genetic engineering.
It really does,
yeah.
And it leaves you with a fascinating question to ponder. What does this mean for our ongoing battle against rapidly mutating RNA viruses if we can now theoretically program our own cells with highly stable Kevlar-coated DNA guides to intercept and destroy viral RNA before it replicates? Well, it's like building an immune system that can adapt and drive backward flawlessly in any condition.
It's a whole new frontier.
This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now, stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base.